You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. So today we do another kind of blast from the past, and this one, I'll be honest, I was really worried about. Turned out perfectly fine, very funny and very pleasant. Again, I'm recording in a clandestine bunker somewhere on the campus. So I'm looking around over my shoulder for sarcastic people who might not quote-unquote get podcasts. But anyway, these movies that we thought were cool in college and spoke to us, this one is a bit darker, and it hit me in a completely different way. I guess not unlike, say, Fight Club does. So I'm optimistic, hopeful, in fact, that if you guys tuned back in, you'd enjoy it too. I haven't plugged this in a while, but remember, the ESO Network has a Patreon. They get our stuff occasionally. We will put up another bonus episode next week. And, you know, follow me. Cineprov, I'm not performing this month, but it's a good one. They're doing Gamera, the kind of classic rubber suit monster movie. And I will be performing at the Atlanta Monsterama Convention. If you go, it will be on Friday night in October, the first Friday in October, which is the 5th. So, hopefully I'll see you there.
Don't ask me. What you know is true.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to a very special commercial for We Podcast and We Know Things.
Wow, a commercial?
Yes, Sam, a commercial. You do this to me every time. Anyway, we are We Podcast and We Know Things, the single source for all of your nerdy news in gaming, TV, film, music, and all things pop culture. Heck, even wrestling. We're basically spreading the good word of nerd one episode at a time.
Check us out here on the ESO Podcast Network and wherever fine podcasts are, including the iOS Podcast app, CastBox, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram to keep up with all the goings-on in the nerdy world. Now back to your ESO Network podcast.
Who's better than us?
And we could fly, 'cause we all have wings, but some of us don't know why.
Welcome to Miami Defend Your Childhood. This week we are trotting along your freshman dorm as we watch another episode from movies we thought were cool in college. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia, Defend Your Childhood. Oh, Donnie Darko. We watched Donnie Darko. I'm host Nick Hoffman, and on panel we have
Matthew W. Quinn, whose book Thing in the Woods has a much more functional teen protagonist.
Yeah, maybe.
Lauren.
Hello, this is Daniel, and I'm not going to do it. I'm just not going to do it. Everybody's expecting me to make a joke about Sparkle Motion and my commitment to that organization, and I'm not going to do it.
I have never once supported Sparkle Motion.
You can take Sparkle Motion and stick it up your rectum. That's what you can do with Sparkle Motion.
Well done.
Okay, Donnie.
So I will say this is Matt's pick, and I'll give him the floor for a second, but I want to hear from Lauren, who really loves this movie, in a minute. So, Matt, give us your thoughts. Why did you pick this film?
Well, I actually saw it somewhat earlier because I think I was still in high school. Mm-hmm. So I rented it from Hollywood Video. Once Ooh. Upon a time, there was such a wonderful place as Hollywood Video.
Uh-huh. I'm going to stop you right there. Wonderful place?
I like video rental stores on principle.
Okay.
That's fine, but I remember Hollywood Video and Blockbuster, and they were just the most evil places imaginable.
How are they evil?
Guys, you need to learn to have jokes.
I'm getting to one.
All right. Okay. So, yeah, anyways. So I rented it from Hollywood Video, and I remember liking it at the time, so I thought, oh, well, let's see if it's still good. It wasn't.
I disagree, but Lauren, you're the one who loves this movie.
Yes.
Did it hold up?
So I need to tell a story.
Please.
So I first found this movie my senior year of high school. And for those in our audience that don't know, Nick and I actually went to high school together. We went to the same high school. And
we did.
And we had a film class. And the project, our final project at the end, is we had to pick 5 films that we would put in our own film class and why. And Donnie Darko was one of my 5. and by the way, I want to mention that Nick and I's, our portfolios were examples to the other students.
Yes, we were in the class together.
Anyways, we both got 100s, and they were examples to the other students. Just had to throw that out there.
I forgot.
I have to ask, Nick in high school, during the keg parties he hosted, were the kegs filled with O'Doul's?
I was not the party person, as Lauren will contend. I've been the way I've always been, which is that people flock to me. So it was always small groups.
Flock to us, Daniel.
Yeah. And her and I were always movie buddies. In fact, I remember one particular bad session. Remember we went to see, it was a Jennifer Aniston, Ben Affleck movie about them breaking up.
The breakup.
And we thought it was going to be a comedy, and it was a 2.5. Yes. Oh, my God. So, we've been seeing movies together for 20 years now.
So this was Donnie Darko was one of my 5 that I picked to show in my film class. And I don't know. There was just something about it. I was in love with Jake Gyllenhaal, first of all. But I don't know. I just thought it was different and unique. I liked how most movies didn't deal with time travel and these kind of, you know, issues. So I thought it was different. I thought the story was interesting. And that's the main why I liked it. So,
well, and I'm not going to pick on you for a second, but you said you must have been a darker kid at the time when you saw this. So
I must have been going through some shit.
Were you a goth?
No, I wasn't.
I'm just totally picturing you in the dyed black hair and with the Lydia Dietz outfit and like the heavy black eyeliner.
You picture me as goth?
Oh, yeah. I can totally see it.
Okay, no.
Trying to turn down the sexy here, Daniel. This is a serious podcast. But I was going to say, to your point, I didn't see this until between I graduated 03, so between my freshman and sophomore years of college, so summer 04.
Yep.
And I had just broken up with a girlfriend, and so I was in the right mood to see this movie. And I was looking for some dark stuff.
I think it hit me at the right time where...
And
I liked it.
And so to
and I
wit,
liked the scary. I liked Frank. I liked
the way that Jake Gyllenhaal is kind of vacant when he's So before we go too far into this description, Mr. Sudsies, will you give me a plot description?
Okay, so it's about this really depressed kid named Donnie, and since this takes place in 1988, he's the sort of kid who thinks Danzig and Skinny Puppy are just super swell and that The Cure is just too mainstream. Anyway, he sleepwalks and has a variety of mental issues that he's seeing therapists over. And during one of his sleepwalking episodes, he ends up on a golf course where he meets this man in a bunny costume who tells him when the world's going to end. And it's a lunar cycle out. It's like an exact lunar cycle.
Frank
I looked
wakes
it up.
Him up.
Right. Wait, what?
He says, wake up.
Frank is one who leads him to the golf course
and
saves him from the falling engine.
So after that, Donnie, I guess, is trying to figure out how the world's going to end and how he fits into the apocalypse.
Frank says the world will end in 28 days, 6 hours, 42 minutes, and 12 seconds.
That is when the world will end. Anyway, also in that month, Donnie's just going through typical teenage life. He gets a girlfriend. He stands up to bullies. He fights a pedophile, which is that was kind of a funny scene.
Who is Patrick Swayze? Anyway.
Yeah, I know it was, but at the same time, he meets with this old woman named what do they call her? Grandma Death.
Grandma Death. Yeah.
Grandma Death. All right. Who has written a book about exactly what he's experiencing? So he's using that book to try and figure out how the world's going to end and how he can save it.
Exactly. So this movie is weird, and it's very, I mean, Daniel will hate me, but it's Slaughterhouse 5Z. It's a man unstuck from time. So time is, I mean, to quote Night Vale, time is weird.
So it goes.
Wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff.
And so, like, for example, at one point, Donnie threatens to destroy His sister's Ariel doll, right? Little Mermaid came out the year after this, so that's out of time. There's a bunch of anachronisms, which I'm going to give Richard Kelly the benefit of a doubt and say he meant to do, because why not? You didn't talk about how he was supposed to die. So when he was on the golf course...
Oh, yeah, the jet engine.
A jet engine lands in his room. So the fact that he's wandering the golf courses at night due to some sort of narcolepsy or whatever... somnambulism is what saves his life. And so there's this huge debate about mental illness. He's on a pill. Now, here's the thing that I didn't ever care about, but I'm sure all of you heard. This movie has theories. And nothing pisses me out more about movies than people who don't talk about what's on the fucking screen. A movie is a visual and audio media. And so if you're like, well, the thing is, George Lucas meant for Jar Jar Binks to bring the Sith Lord. Don't give a shit. If it's not in the movie, it's... So the idea that he's taking medicine or not taking medicine, and there's hallucinations or there's not hallucinations... Are the pills placebo
versus actual reality? Yes.
And so are the pills placebos? Is this in his mind? Is it not? Don't matter. What's on the screen is he's taking his pills sometimes, and when he takes his pills, he hallucinates a rabbit named Frank, and he tries to stab it in an incredible sequence.
Now, I'm going to jump in here.
Fuck you, Daniel.
I know. I get that a lot. My introduction to this movie was from the GeoCities webpages.
Oh, wow.
Devoted to it, where they were trying to figure out exactly what was going on. And when you're younger, you think, oh, this movie's like a puzzle. You got to figure it out in order to really get it, man. But you're exactly right, Nick. Most of the stuff that they were talking about was not actually on the screen. It was just a bunch of nonsense.
Well, and I like that a movie can instill that in people. But I hate when they tell me I'm wrong because I didn't read a website. Angel Fire, GeoCities, they're not official sources.
Now, another thing, this movie came out the same year that Mulholland Drive came out.
Also, it came out a month after 9/11, which we need to address.
We'll get there, I'm sure. But anyway, I just remember hearing the story about them both movies being at Cannes. I think Mulholland Drive won the Palme d'Or that year, or at least Best Director or some big award. I didn't look it up beforehand. Forgive me.
Why would you?
I know, because we're not professional here. But anyway, so he went in, Richard Kelly went in and watched Mulholland Drive and was like, well, damn it. I've made the kiddie version of that movie. And now looking at it, I'm like, yeah, you did.
Well, but there's nothing wrong with that. It just, it feels like... It feels like the low budget version of something, and I don't hate that because of it. It just, there's a lot of things that happen off screen, and I'm much more charmed with this movie now than I was when I was in college, which we should get to. Now, Lauren, you have notes. Where do you want to go from this?
Oh, no, I was just going to say you just mentioned it. This released a month after 9/11. And the director, Richard Kelly, wasn't sure what to do with the violence. And hello, a jet plane.
A plane crashing. Yeah, no.
Crashing into something. So, this movie actually failed. It was considered a plop, you know, at the beginning. But then it was released, I want to say, re-released 8-10 years later, and a director's cut, and he made some.
I think it was in 2004 that it got re-released.
I don't know. It was released a couple times, so. But then it became with the director's cut became more clear with people. They showed more of the book that Grandma Death hands to Donnie, which I think really explains a lot. Which is called The Power of Time Travel.
Philosophy of Time Travel.
And then with that, it became like this huge cult hit and made like millions and millions of dollars and became more pop culture.
Well, and to your point, I'd just give you some numbers because who gives a shit? But like this explains that you're on the money. When it was released, it was right before Halloween 2001. And so plane crashes were all the rage, right? But... in the opening weekend, it only made $110,000. And at its height, its widest release was 58 theaters. But it was open for 9 months. Because, wow, like you said, it was a cult movie. Like, it almost, it wasn't a midnight movie, but it just kept sticking on. And so it was in theaters when it was finally released in DVD still. DVD! Like,
so the Plaza was probably playing it for those 9 months back in the day?
I'm sure it was. And they thought it was really edgy. And then they followed it up with Rocky Horror, because that's what you do with the Plaza.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but I mean, to me, in 2001, this reminded me of the Majora's Mask video game. Like, there's a timeline you can see, like, 6 days until the apocalypse. And you're like, all right, fine. I guess we're not going to save the world. Also, Drew Barrymore's in this movie, which matters.
Oh, which, yeah, I totally forgot about.
And she executive produced it. She funded this movie.
I saw that.
Well, I mean, after
she
all those,
the teacher.
After all that Charlie's Angels money, I mean, she had cash to burn.
She plays the English teacher, and I have a question. So the main girl that Donnie falls in love with, Gretchen, comes as a new student, and she walks in, and Drew Barrymore goes, "Sit down next to the boy that you think is the cutest," which I thought, how the hell would that fly ever?
Well, that's
Nick,
just fly.
Nick, you're a teacher. How would that fly if one of your new students, you said?
Well, I make sure never to sit next to the cutest boy.
Well, this was in 1988, so maybe they cared less.
Reagan
maybe.
Did not care about sexual harassment.
Teachers. You guys are teachers, so I just wanted to ask your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, it's an important thing for a young lady to identify.
Well, that sounds like something that could just cause unnecessary drama and fighting, so no.
Oh, I mean, we can eventually get to the, like, sexual abuser, like, violent guy. Like, what was it? Like, Jughead and the... And of course, Seth Rogen.
Those two lowlifes who are harassing her, and then Donnie comes to kind of rescue her and persuades her to be his girlfriend, even though he is incredibly creepy in that scene.
They're both creepy. They're all creepy. He might as well be David Schwimmer, for Christ's sake.
They're both
well,
creepy.
Those two are getting rapey.
To be fair, they're both creepy because she does talk about how her dad is stabs.
Oh my
mom
God. So her dad is like the Zodiac. I don't know what's going on there, but like, he destroys their house and kills the mom, I think. Right. So this movie has a lot going on that I've forgotten about.
Yeah.
Did we mention that it's 1988 and that everybody's voting for Dukakis?
That's how you know it's a dystopian future. I told my wife, she's like, Dukakis. I'm like, yeah, this is a dark future.
Oh shit. His youngest sister, the one that's in that dance troupe.
Yeah.
That's Samara from The Ring.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Good on her. She had a career.
So,
I liked all the little details they got to make this a period piece for 1988. So the gas cans are the right make and color. I remember my dad fueling the lawnmower with them.
Yeah, sure.
The TVs are all wood paneled and boxy.
Yeah.
They got, you know, you can, they got them, you know.
They got a lot of the references, kind of, perfect.
The kind of woke, I guess, sister who wants to vote for Dukakis, and her parents who are like, well, how are you going to run the household if half your husband's paycheck is being taken by taxes? Not her paycheck, her husband's. You kind of see the clash of values there. All...
Even though she's going to Harvard.
Well, and she argued that her she wouldn't have kids till she was 30, which is just crazy. Crazy!
Yeah, so it's all very shown and not told, and the little details and subtleties I liked.
How come there's not a scene then of like, what's her name? The youngest sister, Samantha. How come there's not a scene of her like watching the MTV?
Well, I will say though, did you notice that Dukakis?
There is. They do show MTV.
Oh, they do?
They do.
Absolutely.
They not only do they, but there's the little Dukakis and the little America's mm-hmm. Funniest Home Videos and old football. They do fill the
guys,
the room.
Let's discuss the soundtrack. The soundtrack alone, like, is amazing.
Now,
shows the time. I think really well.
I think
sets
it
the
too.
Mood and the time.
I could have sworn Lips Like Sugar was on the soundtrack. Is it on the soundtrack?
Sounds familiar.
I mean,
even the part where they're panning everyone mm-hmm. to show all the characters. They show Drew Barrymore. They show Noah from ER. Mm-hmm. Noah Wyle and Patrick Swayze. They show all the characters that way with that beautiful, you know, soundtrack. I think it's David Bowie.
Yeah, they do. There's Bowie on it.
Yeah.
There's Joy Division on it.
There's Joy Division. Mm-hmm. It's a well-constructed... I wonder what happened with this movie. Obviously, 9/11 sunk it. Like, this is one of the few movies I would say 9/11 ruined. Just like Lone Gunman TV show.
And Zoolander.
And Zoolander's not a great movie.
Oh, you take that back.
Here's the thing. I like comedy.
Fight.
Sure. I love comedies, but no comedy is going to be a big budget comedy, right? I think it was fine. I don't think 9/11 affected it that much. I think it belonged where it needed to be, which is a rental. Most comedies need to be either a rental. Mm. I mean, you can argue with me all you want. I don't think it sucked any box office out of it.
Well, do you guys think it shows some of the true elements of time travel? I mean, some of it is based on Stephen Hawking's.
It is.
You know, black hole theory and the water, metal, or elements. And do you guys think that has any truth, or is that all just movie bull?
My beef with the movie was it was an incoherent mess. I didn't really have a problem with the science.
I was going to say to you, the conversation that he has with not Breckenmeyer, the physics teacher that's apparently
Noah,
exactly, with mm-hmm. Dr. with Professor Noah, whatever his name is, the one who's shacking up with Drew Barrymore. Mm-hmm. That's the thesis of the movie, right? Because he has that first thing where the After Effects package that makes the chest burst out like it's the abyss, which is a cool scene. Right. Mm-hmm. And he has this whole debate as to whether or not we have free will. And well, if you can see your future, does that mean you can choose against it? Right. That's a good scene, like, because that's the philosophy of the movie. And my thought to it, to your point, and against, I guess this is where I would come into conflict with Daniel and maybe Matt. I like that that's the one scene, because that's, to me, the anchor screw. If you don't care, you can enjoy the rest of the movie. But if you do care, that's the scene you can pick apart. Like, now, the only problem I have with it is, since it's a movie out of time, I wish that had happened to her earlier in the movie so the rest of it has more meaning. I don't need the scene where he almost masturbates in front of his psychiatrist.
Right.
Unless there's a reason why. Because, like, it's supposed to show that his unconscious is so messed up. Right, like his existence doesn't matter.
Right.
Oh, is that the bit where he's talking about being denied these hungry, hungry hippos?
Yes.
Well, no, and he's under hypnosis, and he's talking about wanting all he fantasizes about Christina at school is wanting to have sex, and she's like, "Well, what do you do outside of school?" And he goes, "I watch TV. I watch Married with Children, and all I do is watch it on mute and pretend to have sex with Christina Applegate."
A lot of people did that back in 1988.
So they had her wear less and less clothing.
But anyway,
right? Girl.
Wasn't she Ron Burgundy's girlfriend?
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
I mean, he agrees with us.
Of course,
they go to Pleasure Town. Moving on.
I didn't really care whether or not the time travel stuff they were talking about was correct or incorrect.
Okay. Okay.
I just, because to me, that was completely pointless. It was a movie trying to pretend like it was smarter than it was.
I disagree with you, because I think, with like Lauren said, this is him trying to figure it out. If he's our narrator, he needs to find logic. And if the movie's trying to prove to us he's not crazy when the director says he's crazy, that's the conflict, right? So if he's finding logic in what doesn't make logical sense, I mean,
there has to be conflict somewhere.
And so the conflict is interesting, because it means that the main character is arguing with the director. I'm not going to argue with you here that it's weird, but I think it's neat. It reminds me of scenes from like Fear and Loathing, like a lot of the movies that we had listed in that clip that might not make the final cut. So, you know, whatever.
Right.
But
one thing they did well is I really got a serious schizophrenic vibe off Donnie, like the hallucinations and just general twitchiness.
Oh, yeah. Jake Gyllenhaal does a good job.
I mean, I'll probably rant at some point about how much I hated this movie, but I really like the acting. Everyone in this movie is a really good actor.
Yeah. I agree.
Well, and we should talk about little things. For example, Frank shows up more and more and more and more and more and more and more. And as he's showing up more and more and more and more and more and more, Donnie is fighting him, conversing with him, trying to figure out what this Frank thing is. And at one point, he literally is – Frank appears most regularly, at first at least, right after he's taken his pill. Mm-hmm. His antidepressant, his anti-anxiety, whatever it is supposed to be. And so at one point, he's literally just looking at this wall, which it's supposed to be one of those infinity mirrors in a bathroom where there's a mirror on both sides. And so he's looking right at the camera, and when it cuts around, there's just Frank. And we haven't described Frank, but he's about 6 foot tall. He's wearing a gray felt rabbit suit, maybe with like fur on it. And it has this horrible teeth, like yeah. these, oh, and these alien creepy. Gray alien it's eyes.
Creepy. Yeah.
Picture a xenomorph from Alien crossed with a rabbit, and that's pretty Bugs much Bunny. It. Yeah.
And at one point, and like the way that they distribute this, they set up this scene, it's literally there's a kind of invisible wall between Jake Gyllenhaal, whose name is Donald Darko, and Frank, and he interacts with it. He pokes it like it's rippling, like, you know, again, like you're Super Mario 64 and you're just rippling the wall in front of you. And at one point, he's literally trying to stab it in the eye, the one eye that's clouded out. And yeah, no, it's bleak. And Frank just starts showing up more and more and more, mm-hmm. including on a date with Gretchen.
Oh, man, that was both simultaneously one of my favorite scenes and least favorite scenes. It was one of my favorite scenes because they're watching the first Evil Dead movie. And that's what they go on date night for. And it's one of my least favorite because that whole dialogue where Frank takes off his mask and you see that it's a guy with a missing eye underneath is just kind of ridiculous in the way they speak. Plus, if you look at the marquee after they leave, it's like, okay, it's the Evil Dead showing, and the other movie is The Last Temptation of Christ, which is like, oh, come on.
Well, that sounds like I might be foreshadowing a little bit.
That's, no shit.
Oh, well.
Ding, ding, ding.
So it doesn't make it clever, though. I mean, throwing obvious Christ imagery into your movie really shows you're being desperate.
So, I'm sorry, that famous line from that scene is kind of becomes a famous line.
He Give goes, it to us.
Why do you have that bunny? Why are you wearing that stupid bunny face?
Yeah, why are you wearing the
bunny suit? Oh, he yeah. goes, why are you wearing that human suit? Okay, that freaked me the out the first time I saw this.
It did.
That, the way he says it in that voice is very deep and kind of purposely. That line was freaking Good. Creepy.
Well, it was the next line that really got me where he takes off the mask and is like, why are you called Frank? It was the name of my father and my father before him. It's like, all right.
Okay, and then he says, have you ever seen a portal?
Yeah.
And he shows Donnie the time portal.
And then, of course, he goes and destroys Patrick Swayze's house.
I loved Patrick Swayze as a bad guy. I love yeah. that. I love that.
Well, and for you who have not seen this, I don't know how obscure it is anymore. Okay, so for those of you who have not seen this movie, he is a motivational speaker who talks about the dichotomy between love and fear. And everything is either between love and fear, which Donnie, of course, and logical people take offense with, because there's more than love and fear, of course. But as most students are, they don't care. And so everyone is playing along with the crazy lady, but Donnie is the one person who calls her out on her bullshit, which causes conflict. However, the whole town is obsessed with Patrick Swayze's character, whose name I'm going to have to look up because who could
Jim.
Be bothered?
Jim Cunningham.
Jim Cunningham.
Hey, good for you.
There was also foreshadowing with that because one of Donnie's friends, to Sharita Chin,
yep.
actually I noticed rewatching it again, says, I hope you get molested.
Yes.
Shut up! Shut up! Did you guys notice that?
I did.
Yeah.
And she's awesome.
What do you think the purpose of Sharita Chin is in this movie?
She's Superintendent Chalmers. She's the only one who gets what's going on. Okay. She's the only real person. Because okay. everyone else is a cliche, and she's not. Okay. I mean, honestly...
To show how dysfunctional the social crew is. I mean, people are just mean to her.
Well, I mean, to be fair, if you look at the color scheme, everyone is white with brown hair. Except for her. Literally, everyone else in the movie is a white person with brown hair. They even dye people who are blonde to brunette so that everyone is white and brown hair except for her. It's literally the most horrifying example of racism you can imagine. If you are anything other, like a blonde person would stick out in this school. And she is Asian. And all they do is make fun of cliches of her. She speaks perfectly fine, and they give her racial stereotypes, right? And she is the only human being in this world. She has no bad background. She is a person. She feels bad. And literally to shut out the world, she wears earmuffs. She's the only person who's sympathetic. Donnie is not a sympathetic character. Let's not forget.
No, he's kind of an asshole.
He's
actually.
Crazy.
Well, and he's a jerk.
Yeah.
I just want to also point out to a connection to another past episode, the woman who played that crazy teacher who was obsessed with Jim Cunningham.
Yeah.
Same woman from Speed who tried to get off the bus and then Dennis Hopper.
Shit. Yeah. Absolutely.
Is she the one from the one with the baseball cornfield movie?
Field of Dreams.
Field of Dreams?
Is she the one from Field of Dreams who tries to get that book removed from the school? Because apparently the actress plays a lot of uptight stickler characters, and her character is obnoxious, but she does a really good job playing her.
I don't see her listed on the Tribune as playing that character, but I mean, you're right. It is basically the same character.
You could convince me. Maybe she was in Basketball Field of Disappointment.
What was the book that they were trying to ban anyway?
Oh, God damn it.
In Field of Dreams or in this one?
No, in this one. Graham Greene's The Disruptors.
All right. Because they also watch Watership Down at one point, don't they?
They do.
Okay.
I mean, the whole thing is supposed to be, do kids interact with books in the way that people are afraid of? Right? Like, I mean, the thing is, I mean, in the last season we did Matilda. Does child abuse give them special powers? Well, if you read Matilda and Harry Potter, it does. But otherwise, no, you don't abuse children. That's not how people interpret those books. You don't destroy an old man's house because you read the book The Disrupt. I mean, when I was in high school, I'm not going to name the school, but when I was in high school, we read a book called The Chocolate War. Yes. And in The Chocolate War, it's all about pranking kids. We didn't prank each other like that. Like, the thing is, you learn a message from that or a separate piece. Well, no one learns anything from a separate piece because fuck John Knowles. But, you know, like...
book sucked.
I had to read Cynthia Voigt in middle school and fuck Cynthia. I don't know if she's still alive, and if she is, I'm sorry.
Well, here's the thing. This podcast is nothing but venting about high school.
What was I... You know what movie did that whole book banning thing a lot better? Pleasantville. Do you remember when books are coming back and the two books everybody reads are Huck Finn and Catcher in the Rye, which are like the two most banned books in this country?
Well, and I was just thinking about other things. I mean, like Patrick Swayze. I mean, you can ban dancing all you want, but people are going to still dance. Like the idea that you're going to ban, you're going to ban Graham Greene, for God's sake. Like, it's just so mundane. Ban Bukowski.
Wrong dancing movie there, by the way.
Oh, yeah, I know.
All right.
Who was in that one? John Kevin Lithgow Bacon. Was the one bowing.
Kevin Bacon was the rebellious kid.
Kevin Bacon, you're not going to you're not going to dance. John Lithgow, man, he needs to take the plug out of his ass. All right. So
another
what's
person I thought was an amazing actress was the mom in this.
Oh
I
my god,
she was really good.
Her rolling her eyes at at Sparkle Motion.
The president from Battlestar Galactica?
Yeah, that's the first thing that came to mind when I saw this movie again. I'm like, that's her. Yeah,
she is so good.
And
I thought she was fabulous.
First lady in Independence Day as well.
She was. I'm going to get her name.
She's fabulous.
Mary McDonnell.
Yep. I remember I was active in the Battlestar Galactica forums back when the show was on. They said, you know, Independence Day and Battlestar Galactica, keep Mary McDonnell's feet in the ground or the world's going to end. And the same thing happens in this movie. She gets up in the airplane and the time warp pulls the engine off.
Yeah, so this is where the movie falls apart for me. Donnie Darko dies, right?
Yeah.
So, spoiler.
For a 17-year-old movie. So, this movie's almost old enough to vote.
Yeah, but not everyone has seen it.
Not everybody's seen Citizen Kane either, and Rosebud was the sled.
Daniel, I didn't know that.
Oh, there you go.
I thought it was the name of his wife.
No, that was
the stripper. No, not the stripper. The exotic dancer that he hires an opera for.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right.
I thought it was his dog. Anyway.
I really do think that there was a reference to a William Randolph Hearst talking about his mistress in like letters.
That's probably. Okay, so.
What were you gonna say? You were saying something before we cut you off.
I think I'd I was going to make the ending, since we're talking about Donnie Darko dying, the ending is legitimately sad. Mm-hmm. And the first thing came to my mind was, you know, it was a better thing now I do now that I've ever done is a better rest that I go to now that I've ever had or something like that. Because
the Mad World song, you're saying?
Yeah.
Mad World lyrics.
I was quoting A Tale of Two Cities.
Well, no, I know you were.
Well, okay, but those are the lyrics of
the song that they play over the end.
At the final scene.
Oh, that's in there too?
Yeah. Yes.
So,
I just thought of.
To me, this is where the movie gets weird. Because. So the end of the movie is Donnie Darko after. Oh,
after a Halloween party. So his sister does ultimately get accepted into Harvard. Mm-hmm. So they decide to throw a Halloween party, which
was his actual sister in real life. I thought it was so neat. Yeah, Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, me too. That was pretty cool.
His actual sister.
Rachel Dawes from The Dark Knight. That's who that is.
So it was good. Matt and I had this discussion at trivia the other day. He said it was a clever idea. I think it was good casting. We agree on that they work well together because no one can throw an insult at you quite like a sibling.
Yes.
Which is why the show Dexter got weird, because you can't have a debate between a sister and a brother when they're actually husband and wife.
Ew.
So
what is this, Game of Thrones?
Well, that's how Dexter worked. So.
What is this, Rudy Giuliani's marriage?
Which one?
All of them. So, as we wind down here, the whole thing is, at the end of the party, they go to knock on the door of Grandma Death. Grandma Death. And when they do, they run into Rapist and Low Blow, which is...
Seth Rogen
and someone who will never act again. And after having a knife to both of their necks, Gretchen gets thrown into the road and then gets run over by a guy with long, shaggy hair who is wearing the Frank costume.
Well, they earlier hinted at him on that fridge note where it's like going out to buy beer Frank, and it's in that weird handwriting that we've seen throughout the movie.
Frank is the sister's boyfriend.
Yes.
Which we didn't find out, which we didn't know until then.
How would he not know that?
Because it's all secret. He's never at the house.
You see the sister sneaking out. The fact that she's even dating this person is not
It was
well
more
known.
Secret, right.
Well, and trust me, if my girlfriend in high school wasn't in marching band with us, my brothers would never have known. They would have wanted to stay as far away from that as possible. But to that point, the idea, like, we only see his face once, which is in the theater when he takes his mask off and he's got a bloodied eye and we don't know why. And at one point, the time goo takes Donnie to his dad's gun. Yes. Or, I mean, it could be his mom's gun. We don't know. It's in a Nike's case, which is whatever.
Back in Reagan's America, everybody was issued a gun. It came in this little cardboard box. That's something you know now.
It's something you know now. You can't unknow it. But he pulls out the gun. He shoots the rabbit in the eye. And he goes, "Tez," to the guy who's dressed like the clown from It, which is also set up in the first scene where the mother is drinking red wine and reading It. Goes, "Go home.
Oh, yeah.
Go home and tell no one of this." And so, driving in a corpse car with his dead girlfriend, he goes to the top of the hill to escape the cops as though they're in the Blues Brothers and the cops show up in the last minute.
Wait. So you're saying that during this entire movie, Donnie was on a mission from God?
Dude, this movie is the most reference-heavy thing until Stranger Things. And if you notice, the font on his shirt is the font that they use in Stranger Things.
Oh.
Look at it throughout. Other than his Catholic school uniform, every shirt he has text that is the 80s text that is in Stranger Things.
Wow.
Girl, I crack this code. So this is where the movie gets weird for me. The girls... who are in Sparkle Motion after talent show end up going on Ed McMahon's Star Search because this is 1988 all over.
Oh, Ed McMahon, there you go.
And they get the quarterfinals, whatever. It's their plane on October 30th after his girlfriend gets run over.
Mm-hmm.
Wherein, flying back, the engine falls off, which means it lands... A lunar cycle earlier, 28 days earlier, whatever. 26 days, 24 days.
28.
24. As long as it's not 28 days later.
28, yeah.
And so to that point, he finally dies. Okay?
Because it sets the parallel universe right again. He made it right again and changed his where he's the...
Despite the fact that I would say don't sacrifice yourself because the pedophile should go to prison... He cannot die anymore because with his death, the plane can't crash.
Now, yeah, that's what I was getting. I was kind of wondering, yo, if Donnie had died at the beginning of the movie, Gretchen would have survived, but so much other good stuff would not have happened, including the pedophile getting jailed and somebody actually being nice to Sarita Chen and all this other stuff.
It's also impossible because if he goes back to the beginning... none of the rest of the movie can happen.
It also
a time loop.
It also implies that the movie didn't need to exist at all because he shouldn't have left his room in the first place. But didn't the whole final shot sort of acknowledge that there were some people, including the pedophile, who retained some memories of that alternate universe?
They did. He woke up in a cold sweat.
In the dream.
Yeah. Right. And Gretchen and his mom somehow knew each other.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Stuff like
right,
that.
Right, they wave at each other, which I thought was actually a really powerful scene.
I think it was great. I have nothing against it. It was just that when it falls apart, like, right. It really is done as though the director took like a ball peen hammer and cracked the film apart. Like, because they literally show people waking up from a nightmare as though, I mean, you can pick your metaphor, an X-Files or a Twilight Zone where the person wakes up in a cold sweat. I'm not opposed to it, but that was a moment where I looked at my wife who had never seen it before, and she was just like, and it made me want to rewatch it. As opposed to the first time I saw this, where I wasn't sure if I ever needed to see it again, like American History X, I'm like, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. Edward Norton is an asshole. But now I'm like, I should almost rewatch it again. So.
What did Candace think? I'm curious.
She liked it.
Yeah, okay.
She did. And mainly because I think it was one of these things, not unlike Boondock Saints, where it was set up as this movie that, like, everyone thought it was cool. And she's like, that was better than I thought it was going to be. Maybe it is worth, you know. So.
No, I have to agree with you. At the end, I do kind of feel like they're trying to tie everything together and make it in a neat little bow, but just doesn't quite get there. It is, you know, a little misconstrued. I mean, even with the vortex that you see directly over his house, it's like, okay, dude. And he's laughing hysterically.
Yeah.
When he realizes that it works, it does kind of, I get it, but it does kind of fall apart at that scene.
Exactly. I think we've gone on long enough. You guys ready to give some final judgments? I'll start with Sudsies, and then we'll go around the corner. Matt, you can go second to me.
Okay. All of the teen angst stuff in this movie is actually really well done. Like his isolation at high school, him standing up to bullies, him standing up to like the buttoned up facade of the 80s, because I think Patrick Swayze was ultimately sort of a Robert Tilton figure who, as the 80s came to close, ultimately collapsed when everybody realized what a fraud he was. And even Frank was okay. The thing that really just doesn't make any sense in retrospect was what everybody was trying to figure out back when this first came out, which is the whole time travel stuff and parallel universe stuff. It really doesn't need to be in there. And the movie would be a lot better if it weren't.
Mm.
So I think Richard Kelly was on to something. It's the same as the other, like, maybe, what, two other movies he's done since this? He was kind of on to something, but he just kept piling stuff on top of it to the point where it just became incomprehensible and he'd lost what he'd had in the first place.
Fair enough. Lauren?
No, I liked it. This was a lot darker than I remembered, and more creepy and darker. But I just, uniqueness goes a long way with me. It gives points. I don't think there's many movies that kind of deal with the issues like the time travel and stuff like that. I love the soundtrack. I love the acting. It definitely has its flaws and missing points. I do think you have to, the director's cut makes a lot more sense. And for a movie, in my opinion, you shouldn't have to have a director's cut for it to make sense. Like,
agreed.
Right. It should have been a little more clear, but I don't know. In general, I was entertained.
Thank you. Matt?
Y'all are a lot more merciful than I am. I thought it was an incoherent, boring mess that was entirely too long. Yeah, it had good acting. I'll give him that. And there were some legitimate emotional parts, but I really did not enjoy this movie at all. So maybe the version I saw in high school, I hope maybe that was a director's cut, because you guys are almost saying the director's cut was a lot better. Because I remember liking it then, and this one I just hated. Like, seriously, I gave it in my blog the lowest review I've ever given a movie ever.
Mm.
And he liked Secret Life of Pets more than like the Bible, I thought. So
The Secret Life of Pets was funny. Really funny.
So, I mean, I didn't hate it like Matt, so I'm going to argue with him there, but I'm at a loss, not because I didn't like it. I just don't know between Daniel and Lauren here. So
let's talk about Donnie. Like, Donnie was a good bowler, and he was a good man. He was one of us.
He was out of his element.
He liked to surf up to La Jolla. The thing I'm thinking about this movie is it's kind of one of those beautiful messes. I think it's a cleverly put together movie where it's an idea that the director had that nothing quite worked on, but that doesn't make it bad. It just means that it ended up being a different movie than he expected. I think that the editing is clever. I think that the time, like the literally Chekhovian clock is interesting. So where it fails is there's a lot of diversions, but real life has diversions. So I don't know if I'm giving it the credit that I would have given it as a high schooler or not. That's the problem. I would say if you haven't seen this, you need to see it. Because you'll either hate it like Matt did or not. I never saw the director's cut. I have only seen this same cut several times from Netflix. I'm re-entregued. And to your point, it's free on Netflix. If you have Netflix, there's nothing wrong with just cracking it out. The problem is I can't define the movie. It's not really a comedy. It thinks it is. It also thinks it's a drama. It also thinks it's scary at times. There's also real risk of rape, which is weird, which isn't really a high school thing. I don't know. At some points it falls apart, but I'm charmed by it. However, we are out of time. We have one more episode that will lead us back to college. If you haven't voted, please vote on the Facebook page for the movies that we have not done yet. Because I've told our panelists, I've told our regulars, we're going to choose four of these movies that you guys select that we have forgotten to be a listener request month. So request us movies, please. Movies you thought were cool in college. Last time, of course, was Precocious Kids. You don't know what's going to happen next. So please, next week and every future week, and, of course, a bonus episode. But next week and every future week, tune in so we can put another piece of your past on trial. So thanks, guys.
Why Open Defend Your Childhood is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Stanley Byrne, and executive produced by Nick Hoffman and Stanley Byrne. It's produced by Daniel Suttis, Matthew Clay, and Stanley Byrne. We are a proud member of the ESO Network and a product of Two Letter Podcasting. Our theme is Surf Chimney by Kevin MacLeod. Find it at incompetech.com. It is licensed under Creative Commons. Some of us don't know why. And thanks.
I was scared. This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.